stretch out, that your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say, you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes, and tell me if you take my place. Under the cover of my skin,
this week's episode is brought to you by Brooks, the Seattle-based specialist with over 100 years of experience in the footwear game. At Brooks, their purpose is to inspire everyone to run and be active, because every day with a run is better. They use this philosophy, plus a combination of runner insights and biomechanics, to develop products that will enable you to run longer, further, faster, and happier.
Fantastic. And here we are, the November edition of the Shoe Geeks Inside Running podcast. And I'm joined with my co-host, Thomas DeCanto, in-form runner and owner of the Walker Street Podiatry Clinic in Sydney. How you going, Tommy?
Thanks, mate. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Well, could be slightly better here over in South Australia. But anyway, person who knows about that is Julian Spence, owner of the running company in Ballarat, and also back into his running. So he's been wearing more shoes and he can contribute to this podcast a bit more efficiently now. How you going, Julian?
Yeah. I've been lagging in that department. I got to try a few new shoes this month, which is one of the good things about not being as injured. We get to experiment a little bit more and test out some more shoes. So that was fun.
That's good. I noticed that Tommy's got a fair few new shoes in the rotation, contributing to his good form as well, because he's probably running over 100 miles a week every single week, racing almost once a week. And Tommy, do you want to go through your month of sort of what exciting new shoes you've got? And we'll pull you up on a few of the race results you've had recently as well, just because you're a bit of a humble man. You don't like talking about your race results.
Sure. So I guess the latest few I got, which I believe you guys have got as well, is the three from ASICS, so version 2s of the Evo Ride, Glide Ride, and Nimbus Light. I haven't done much in them yet, but a little bit. So I don't know if you want me to go through a couple of those.
How much running in a shoe do you need to do before you get a bit of a feel for the shoe? Like, how deep do you need to go? Like, I reckon within one or two runs I sort of know whether I'm going to like the shoe or not.
Yeah. I get a lot of info just when I slide it on. Okay. So, you know, I can feel the density of the foam as soon as I put it on. But then I reckon probably similar within one or two runs. I get a fairly decent idea. It's just then, I guess, from there, it's that other sort of maybe 20% sometimes where, as the shoe wears, it can behave a little bit differently sometimes in terms of like durability or the ride can slightly change sometimes. I reckon I've already got a pretty good first feel.
They're pretty exciting, isn't it? Like, I think as far as ASICS goes, that's probably one of the most exciting drops I've had. And I mean, there are a couple like reviews I read on them just before I landed, like the Nimbus Light 2, for example, was sort of, I think one review definitely put it next to something like an Epic React, which I thought you'd like, Tommy. But when I put it on, it wasn't quite like the Epic React. I sort of had properties that were different to the first iteration of the Nimbus Light. But what do you boys think?
Yeah. To me, it felt softer than the Epic React. Felt a fair bit softer underfoot. I'm talking about the Nimbus Light here anyway.
Nimbus Light 2.
Nimbus Light 2. So I actually just came back from my first run in it right then.
Oh, nice.
So fresh. It's actually in my mind, yeah. And it was, so the first version had a couple of little flaws, mainly durability and then not very stable as well. And I think they have remedied the stability aspect in this one. So they've got rid of those skiving from the midsole where it almost had like this concave through the walls of the shoe. That's sort of to get softness, I think, for someone who sort of loads laterally first. It sort of sinks into the lateral corner and then It creates a softer feel, but it really collapses over time. It sinks into itself. And
yeah. So I reckon out of the three, the Nimbus Light 2, I think, is the biggest update. It's pretty different to the original.
What's it remind you of?
To me, it's like closest to a New Balance 880.
Yeah, okay.
It's not like an Epic React at all to me.
Yep.
To me, actually, I've done a couple of runs, a few runs actually the last few days in the Evo ride, and that feels much more like the Epic React did. It's light, it's soft, and it's responsive. So it's like an all rounder. And we were chatting the other day, Julian, it does feel a bit like a Kinvara does, and also to me a bit like the Epic React, although, you know, the Epic React did have a little bit more of a drop and a bit more under the heel. So that's why it probably does have that Kinvara feel with that lower drop, but a stable sort of soft feel as well.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Like the Evo, I haven't got much into the Evo Ride 2 yet as well, but I mean, some people, it was mixed opinions when it first came out. Was it a performance shoe? Was it a daily trainer? Are you thinking it's a daily trainer, Tommy? Or?
For me, yeah. So for me, it's going to be a daily trainer. It's going to be like a nice lightweight daily for me, for sure. Yeah.
I think it's a bit too aggressive for me as a daily trainer. I'll probably save it for runs where I do surges or pickups throughout the run. Maybe some runs if I'm sort of having a fast finish progression type run. But to me, I like a little more shoe underfoot to be a daily shoe.
It's a bit more shoe than the first version, isn't it?
It is. I think they go up two mil in stack overall.
Still keeps this nice rocker though, doesn't it? Like it's still got that late 4-foot rocker on it.
Yeah, pronounced rocker. That's one of the big things with that shoe is that you could really like get up on your midfoot, I reckon. Oh, to me, it felt like I wanted to be on my midfoot more and really popping off the front, like really rolling you forward.
Definitely. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. I found the Glide Ride 2 the better update out of all of them. I know it still feels a little bit like the original Glide Ride, but those concave midsoles have disappeared to some extent. It feels like it's a little bit more stack off the ground, but I don't know if it truly is. But it feels more stable. The weight is good, but it's still one of those odd by itself shoes, which is really, it's a bit alien feeling when you're running on it because you're so high off the ground. It's quite compliant underfoot. And I don't hit a lot of the rear foot, but I found that shoe is just an easy daily train, especially after a track session. I mentioned this about the first model, like you get sore calves, this shoe can offload your ankle and calves, probably like no other shoe really can, I reckon. So,
This shoe for me, considering I sort of work in a Bondi, I've run in the New Balance more, run in the Stinson ATR and the Olympus from Ultra, like this shoe is actually going to play a big part in my running. It's a lot to me. The first one was firm, and this one here feels a lot softer.
I have the opposite impression to you.
Right. Yeah. Well,
yeah. This feels firmer to me than the original.
Yeah. I find it's a little bit firmer than the first model, but it feels more stable.
Definitely more stable. The wider platform underneath. Yeah. And it's so stiff that, like, my foot went numb in it the first time I ran, which isn't uncommon for a really rigid shoe. Like, I'm not sure of the exact mechanisms behind the foot going numb in stiff shoes, but we see it a little bit in the store as well. Some people struggle with carbon-plated shoes and their foot going to sleep. Yeah, I felt it in this one.
Yeah, okay.
As a podiatrist, any insight in why your foot might go numb in a stiff shoe?
Oh, mate, there's an abundance of reasons why feet go numb a lot of the time. But I think a lot of the time when you're hitting those really, really soft, compliant shoes, for example, you're probably actually contacting the midsole for a bit longer period of time. You're not getting a bit of release. What about you, Tommy? What do you think of those? I mean, obviously, besides lacing up a new shoe, but just a really compliant foam underfoot, but that doesn't move too much. So, for example, a Glide Ride, maybe the first time you put a Bondi on, and even some of the stiffer shoes like from the New Balance More as well. Actually, my foot went numb the first time I put the New Balance More on as well. So just maybe because it doesn't move, it doesn't comply as much.
The original version or the second version?
The second version. Yeah, I never got the first version. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I reckon it's it. I see it. I've had a personal experience with it, and clinically with shoes that are like a little bit stiff in the forefoot. So I don't. Mechanism wise, I just feel like it's something to do with it's altering the normal movement around the forefoot joints. So they're just not like they're not bending and they're not moving as they would in other shoes, and that might be just changing the pressure patterns, like you mentioned, maybe timing, like the time under pressure, something like that. And it's just creating a little bit more compression of the plantar nerves for some reason.
Yeah, you're not getting a lot of release. That's it. And I think just pressure over time, I reckon, it's just slightly newer. And I think when you wear those shoes in a lip, you get a bit more offloading. So you get a bit of release of pressure between each step as the shoe starts to conform a touch more.
Yeah. So
what else? You've been in the Brooks Hyperion too, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. I quite like that shoe actually. But again, it's a bit of a weird one. I'm not like the Evo Ride. I'm probably not going to use it for sessions because I've got other session shoes that I probably prefer. So it's in this weird place where, like, what do I use it for? It's light. It's made. It's called Hyperion Tempo. Like, assuming it's marketed and made for running faster. But I've just kind of been using it as a short distance easy run shoe. So I probably wouldn't want to run long in it. But
we'll do a full review on it next week. When you and Nita will review the Hyperion Tempo further in depth, and I'll talk about the Brooks Adrenaline 21 as well.
Yeah, which is good. Thanks to Brooks for handing that. I've done a session of 400s in them already, actually, like a fast session and a couple of jogs as well. So I'll talk a bit about how they vary a bit. So it's felt a bit more traditional to me than other sort of like, you know, those shoes with those super foams as such. But so far it's been okay for both.
Yep, cool.
And Tommy, I don't know if anyone watched the New South Wales 5K event a couple of weeks
ago.
Everyone did, yeah. And
it was
the Thomas DeCano show. It was fantastic. And you ran 14:07, I think, and had a chance to put on the Dragonflies again. And tell us about the race. And obviously, you've been training in the Dragonflies a fair bit now as well.
Yeah, so I do once a week, I do a session on the track, and I've been wearing the Dragonflies probably the last 6 weeks weekly. It was last Thursday we just had like a, it's called a Sydney Milers meet. So there's just some meets which are sort of run by clubs. It was Thursday evening out of Bankstown. Had heaps of our squad out there, run crew out there, which was good. And yeah, I did the 5K, which was like the last event of the evening. I think it started at 9:40 p.m., which was kind of like 40 minutes past my usual bedtime. So that was interesting. I actually didn't get to sleep. I literally didn't get to sleep till about 1:30 that evening. Just too pumped.
Too buzzed.
Too buzzed with the PB. Oh,
and tell me about the start line now of a 5K event in New South Wales. Is everyone in a Dragonfly or?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of Dragonfly. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of Dragonfly. It's crazy, isn't it? It's a bit like what happened with the Vaporfly with road racing. It's just happening now on the track with the Dragonfly.
It's nice, though, because you're all playing by the rules, aren't you?
Like, yeah.
Legal, track legal stuff. It's not like South Australia where everyone wears fucking
We play. Oh, is it going to be a dig?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, no. So it was good evening. It was a really good evening. It was run well. It was well supported. I think a lot of people eager to race now that there are more races on. I was gonna Kieran Tall and I, who I train with, he and I were gonna sort of swap laps for the entirety and try and dip under 14. Conditions were a little bit average. It was a little bit humid and a bit windy, so I wasn't quite sure if I was going to be able to get anywhere near that. But Kieran took the first three. I think the next three, and then Kieran took another lap or so, and then I think he was just struggling a little bit. So then I went around him and just pretty much tried to push on for the rest. So 14:07, it was a massive PB. I'd run 14:12, but that was just a time trial, so I can't really, you know, you can't claim time trials as PBs. So,
very good point.
Yeah, 14:07 now official. Happy with that.
Yeah, congratulations. And shoes, I have to ask.
Shoes felt great.
Two days later, you got up and actually less than 2 days, a Saturday morning. So it was on a Thursday night. You got up and you ran, I think, 5 or 6 by a mile, and you ran them solid. Like, obviously, you pulled up well from the Dragonfly. What did you wear on Saturday morning? You've got a pair of Vaporflies or something to get through that, or?
Yeah. Next to the sense. Yeah.
Nice. So... And then Nelmas mentioned 30Ks the next day at about 4 minute flat pace. What are you wearing? What are you wearing on that run? Like, this is 4 heavy days in a row. And your shoes helping you, obviously.
Nova Blast. Yeah, Nova Blast. So there's a lot of calf protection there. Yeah.
Protection in the Nova Blast.
Yes.
Explain to me.
It's cushion. So the main factors that will offload calf is cushioning and drop. I know stability plays a factor, which is maybe what you're getting at, but the way I run, hitting quite sort of midfoot, I don't get any issues with stability in that shoe on flat road. So really like cushioned and 10 mil drop with a quite squared off rear foot. So I get good heel contact, and so my calf quite likes that.
Wouldn't you put rigidity of a shoe into that unloading the calf factor?
Depends how you strike, I reckon.
Because you can get a 10 mil, like a Nike Free with an 8 mil drop is a lot more aggressive, I reckon, on the calves than, let's say, an Evo ride with a 4 mil drop.
Well, I don't think Nova Blast is extremely flexible. Like, it's a little bit flexible on the fourth, but it's not extraordinarily flexible.
You're just too into your stiff shoes, mate. I reckon Evo ride, around the time my Achilles flared up last time, I was doing long runs in Carbon X, and I was doing some easy runs in the original Evo ride. And the combination of both those stiff, rocked, lower drop things, I reckon it filtered in and was a factor with the overload. So for me, it's actually, I reckon with me, increased bending stiffness might actually increase the Achilles load. It's almost like you're like lengthening the lever of your foot. So if you're like, if the shoe's not bending and my toes aren't bending at the normal forefoot joints, I'm essentially making my foot a bit longer, which might be cranking more load through the
Spot on. And I think that's that late rocker plus that low drop sort of requires more ankle strategy posteriorly for sure. Like, it just happens quickly. And yeah, but then again, Tommy, you're in better shape now as well. You've been wearing a lot more low, like you've been wearing more Dragonflies for sessions. Maybe you can just handle that more now.
Maybe. Yeah. Let's not blame the shoes, but maybe.
Because I know, like, as an example, I put on a shoe from Altra, the Zero Drop, the Torum Plush, which is quite soft, a lot more flexible than the other Altra that I wear, the Olympus. And I know my calves complain much earlier and are a lot sorer post-run in the Torum Plush than they are in the Olympus. And I put down to rigidity of the shoe.
But that's more cushion too, right?
They're pretty similar in terms of stack heights and everything. It's just one's a softer foam. The Torum is a softer foam. The Olympus has more guts, if that makes sense. There's different feels to cushion now with all the versus, like the different foams. There is a lot of variability, and when we talk about cushion now, it's hard because I prefer to cushion, like a glide ride being really cushion. You think it's firm because of how much it's got underfoot and the integrity of that foam and the guts that I feel. Whereas some people put on, say, the Nova Blast, right? And it feels real soft and compliant, like Nitta loves that word. And and they'll say that's a softer shoe. And I'm like, oh, I don't know whether that's a soft or a more cushioned shoe than the. It's just how we perceive cushioning and how the terms that we use are different.
Yeah, agree.
That's a good, and that, it coming into that, there's a Patreon question here from Dan Wilson. This is a good one for you, Julian, because you've just brought it up and said, you know, with an Ultra Zero drop shoe, for example, in a normal rotation of shoes with a 6 to 10 mil drop, are there inherent risk of you wearing a Zero drop shoe, and you know how much a shoe like that change your running gait? And obviously you use it for a particular purpose. Is it to change your gait to offload, or is it just because you want more cush, or?
So for me, I've always used the form over footwear kind of thinking, whereas you're not going to put a shoe on and all of a sudden your form changes. You can really, like, you could midfoot strike in a Brooks Beast if you really wanted to. But like my thinking's changed to a degree using the Ultra more. I definitely feel like I'm more slightly forward lean with a much more of a midfoot strike, landing closer to my center of gravity with an Ultra than I am with the other shoe I've been wearing lately, the 880. So I noticed the difference there, and it's pretty fine differences, but I notice it, and I never thought that I really would. So I think you can change, or you can get gait changes with different footwear, especially like the other example I use is the Alpha Fly, where there's 4 foot pods now, and the feeling of the shoe changes dramatically from a heel strike to a midfoot strike, and you're getting a lot of feedback around that different strike pattern. And so it's almost like there's a target under the midfoot to land on, and you get more benefit from the shoe from landing there. So for me, I have much more of a midfoot strike in the Alpha Fly than the Vapor Fly, where I don't feel as much difference.
Yeah, interesting. So and Tommy mentioned right at the start when he's running the Nimbus Lite 2, he sort of actually compared it to the 880. You just mentioned you've been rotating the 880 now. Why are you wearing the 880 at the moment, and do you find it similar to the Nimbus Lite 2?
No, the 880 I wear for a stable, simple, safe shoe, have a little bit more heel offset to look after, well, the plantar. But the main reason is it fits the device that I use. It's got a very deep midfoot. It's got a nice broad toe box. I wear the 2E version of it. And, it fits the device well. I don't have as much pressure around the top of my foot because of the depth factor. And it's just simple, you know. Like, I love simple shoes. And the 880 is as simple as they get. Like, no bells and whistles, good price, durable. It's a shoe you can put on pretty much any day of the week.
There's a couple of them, isn't there? Like even Brooks have their Ghost, which is a pretty simple shoe, not complicated, quite durable, doesn't cause too many complications, and 880 sits right in that category as well.
Yeah.
So would you put the Nimbus Lite 2 there, Julian, or not?
Not quite, nah. I don't think, firstly, it has the shape. I think it might still be a little too shallow and narrow for a lot of foot types. I think it's too soft as well to handle a more versatile runner. Like when I say versatile, I'm like looking at the person that comes in, say a male 55 kilos to 100 kilos with the average, let's say the average runner who comes in's high 70s into the store. I think it's probably more suited to the lighter weight runner. It's more fun shoe than the 880. It's more poppy. I don't think it'll be as durable, and it's not as stable.
So dare I say, because you and Tommy right now find that shoe to feel a bit different, why do you think you're feeling it a bit different? Do you think it's body weight related or at that point in time, or do you think it's just the way you're striking the ground differently? You guys run a bit differently, and I found a pretty plush shoe. Like I found like the first model bottomed out and the second one doesn't bottom out. There's probably slightly firmer foam than the first model, but definitely to me felt firmer than what an 880 would be.
I think the foam is actually the same density according to ASICS. But even at the end of that 14K run I did, it was a bit hot, like the weather. And I could feel the last K on the road. I'm like, oh, this is getting a little too soft, and I am starting to bottom this out. I started to get flashbacks of the first model. So I am like, maybe I'm 4 kilos heavier than normal, and that 4 kilos makes a difference without a doubt. Yeah.
Well, you're 70 kilos, 4 kilos is what, 7-8%? What do we know? We're looking at, a bit over sort of 7-8% body weight as well. So that things do change a bit in that period of time when you get back down to your mid-60s or whatever your race dollar at. So.
Yeah, they do. And shoes feel differently when you're heavier and when you're lighter. And like sometimes when you cut, as we'll use the famous quote now, when you're covering the ground well, different shoes feel better than other shoes.
It's too true. And 120Ks this week for you, straight back into 20Ks more week than me. And how are you spending those 120Ks? What are you wearing outside of the new shoes that we've just talked about?
So 880 is kind of the main shoe now. I've found the Ultra Olympus to be a nice secondary shoe. I did my long run in the Olympus because it was mainly over trails. So, yeah, it's got the most rocker from any Ultra shoe. It's got a nice broad toe box. The problem with the one I have is that it's slightly too small. And when I was going downhill, like my foot was sliding forward, and I've got a couple of black toenails from the weekend. So that's a pain in the ass, especially for the few days after when every shoe then feels too small because the slightest bit of pressure is exaggerated. I've been doing workouts in the Alpha Fly. I love that shoe now. I know I can put it on and I don't get really sore calves or anything. To me, this shoe has a little bit more in it than the Vaporfly. I know that'll be a debate point, but for me, I like it, especially being a bit bigger. It's a bit more shoe. So that could be one of the reasons. What else have I put on recently? I mean, the Kayano Light, I don't know about the Kayano Light at the moment for me. Like, I've been trying to wear my device with it and it's just way too tight. So I've pulled that out. Running on a trail in a shoe that's too sort of narrow for your orthotic and too shallow, I just was falling. I was rolling my ankle a lot. It just wasn't a great combination.
Have you tried to put your orthotic in like a Hoka?
Yeah. So I've put it in
Do you feel the same thing though? Because I find with the Hoka, the sidewalls, like a shoe which has sidewalls coming up from the midsole, tends to like prop that orthotic up and change the way it fits.
It's also lower. It's lower pitch as well. Like as soon as you drop the heel pitch, you feel the longitudinal arch relatively more if you've got more of a heel pitch, it shifts the center of pressure further forward. So I think when you go to 5 mils, you feel your orthotic more anyway. Do you put it into the Olympus that runs zero?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Do you feel the longitudinal arch more in the Olympus or?
Yeah, I do it as well. So
stick a heel raise in it under it and you'll get rid of that.
Yeah. Yeah, all of a sudden my ultra is this 8 mil. But yeah, I find like the shape of the Hokas are quite good for the orthotic because I normally go for a broad version. It's more about the shape of the midfoot of the shoe or like, yeah, so through that, through the guts is to how the orthotic sits down in it is for me what I go for because that's a comfort factor.
How far have you guys gone into your Kayano Light? Like you guys would be pretty deep in mileage into the now. How's it holding up?
Fine for me. I've probably only done about 250K in it. And it still feels like it's got a bit of life in it. Not sure how much more.
I'm probably only 100K in, so looks fine, feels fine.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's basically what I've been using. I haven't really gone anywhere else there. I've just got these new shoes now. I'm going to get some Ks into the Adrenaline 21, which is a new shoe an update from Brooks.
Yep.
I'll report back on that next week.
Have you worn Adrenaline before or?
I used to wear, so when I used to get Tib Post issues, I used to put on the Adrenaline 18 when it was very strongly posted.
Yeah.
And that shoe, I actually really liked that shoe. It was firm. It was like, because I pronate heavily, I felt like I actually got some good stability from that because it wasn't too soft. And that actually was a shoe I could put on and it would sort of relieve my issues. But when they went to the guide rail system, I didn't really have a use for it anymore because I didn't feel like the guide rails provided the stability I needed for that particular injury. So this is the first time I've gone to the Adrenaline after that.
It's a good point you make, though. Like, I think the way you were using that shoe is a really good example of how you can use shoes well for that reason. Mm. So having an injury and then picking a particular shoe with a particular feature to help with that injury, but not necessarily using it, like having to use it once that injury is not an issue. Mm-hmm. And like I find clinically, like Tib Post responds so well to like the traditional medial posted shoe. So if there's runners out there that have like a real niggly Tib Post, they want to kind of, they're trying to run through it, but it's not sort of settling, and you know, maybe just throw in a shoe with a medial post into the rotation. Obviously, go and get maybe you know, go somewhere, get some advice, try on some shoes, go to a run specialty store, try them on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it just seems to make such a difference for that particular injury.
I like that chat because recently there's been this real wave of hate against medial support shoes, and there's like a campaign being driven to get rid of them and to bastardize them. And it might not have a lot of like I mean, the research is so blurry that they basically go, oh, well, there's no research for them, so let's get rid of them. Or let's say, hey, these things don't work. Why do we even bother with them? Well, go and speak to someone who works in a running store, or like, so I've been there, like you guys have been there so long. You've seen cases and examples of where medial support can help, and we see it on the daily. So if, like, and it might be anecdotally still, like the Nerdburger PhD guys like you, Nitta, might not love this chat, but I like, I'm like, see a foot, see someone niggle, have a look at their shoe, how it's worn in the last 300K, and go, well, you need some firmer density on the inside of your shoe.
I do like this chat. Like, but I think probably the point is that I think for a bracket in the early 90s, when suddenly they were looking at trying to, you know, shoes became associated with, you know, higher sales in recreational communities, suddenly injury prevention became important. And obviously foot pronation was almost at the forefront of, you know, reducing that would give you an outcome of you know, reduced injury. But we, you know, for you and I and Tom know that in a specific population, like a TIB post scenario or a person with more body weight, there's an effect to having a duo max posting. It's just that it was probably sold in an overkill setting. Like if you put an ASICS Gel Pursue next to a, which is a neutral version of the GT2000, I think statistically the outcome of support would be pretty similar. But if you grab someone who's like maybe 90 kilos compared to 70 kilos and they like that shoe, I'd probably gravitate to putting the person who's heavier into the duo max posting for durability. And maybe as the shoe lifespan goes on, the posting probably plays an effect as the shoe gets older as well. So there's definitely a place for it. It's just maybe it was overprescribed as this sort of, you know, this panacea to reduce injury risk, but it was never truly built for that.
Yeah. So it's like, it's like now, well, like with lots of treatments in healthcare and as well as footwear, it's throwing the baby out with the bathwater, which is, I don't want that to happen. Like I reckon same as you, Julian, you'd probably still want to see the market still having shoes with some either firmer density or figuring out another solution that would have similar effects to a dual density type shoe.
Agreed. Yep.
And I reckon that a lot of the initial chat was about shoes like the Brooks Beast, the ASICS Foundation, these kinds of shoes that like were so extremely posted that no one really wore them. Oh, well, people did wear them for running. Sorry, I shouldn't say that. But by the time I started running, they were very few and far between anyway.
I heard someone say, I don't know if it's true or just completely made up, but I heard someone say that the Brooks Beast used to be the biggest selling running shoe in the US run specialty market.
Do you reckon that's true?
It sounds ridiculous. Yeah. But
nah, I don't know about that. It sounds like maybe for a block and maybe one community or one shoe stop, we can probably sell a Brooks Beast. So
the Brooks Adrenaline was certainly like, I think it was number two after the Nike Free at a certain point. Nike Free when it was used being a fashion shoe for college kids and stuff was number one, and that still was categorized as a running shoe. And then I'm pretty sure Adrenaline was the biggest selling run specialty stores anyway. Yeah.
I don't doubt that. In 2005 and 6 when I was in retail, often you'd pull out, I reckon I even think Mizuno Inspire was selling pretty well back then, but it was like a GT2000 or a Adrenaline, and they were very high selling. So both of those shoes, you could almost blind people to it and they'd walk out 50% of the time in one and 50% of the time in the other.
And then look, I've just seen the Rangers for the next second half of next year. And support shoes are coming back, and they look really good, and they feel good. They feel smooth, and the brands have now been innovative. But it's a good time for footwear, and it's a good time for not medial support. It's a good time for stability shoes.
That's right, and that's the key. I think stability can be defined a bit differently. I still think there's a place of a duo max or like a dual density posting to go into a shoe for support. But I don't think it trumps, say, you know, the total contact area on the base of the foot, for example. But there's times and a place for it. There's been research to try and bring the duo posting back for other reasons, like looking at running economy with and without a posting. I honestly think that's a bit rubbish. Like, I mean, you can improve running economy just by reducing the weight of the shoe. Don't compare a posted shoe and a non-posted shoe for a person who's going to try and jog with less running or less oxygen for jogging for a posting. I think that's probably a bit overkill to try and keep it going. So.
All right, good. Yeah. What have you been wearing, mate? Give us a few.
So, I mean, you guys covered it pretty well. Like, I've been wearing the Nimbus Light too. I really enjoy it. Like, it's a bit firmer than the first model, so I've been doing some of my longer runs in it. Back to the Glide Ride after hard running sessions. But for sessions, I've pretty much stayed with the Saucony Endorphin Pro and the Endorphin Speed. So Speed more for, you know, surfaces that are probably a little bit firmer, and the Pro for a little bit softer, just because the carbon plate's stiffer, so it makes it feel more comfortable if I'm running short reps. But I have one shoe that you guys probably haven't worn yet. It's a bit unique. Is the Air Victory, the new Spike from Nike.
Zoom and Victory.
The Zoom, yeah, the Nike Air Zoom Victory, is it?
I didn't think it was called the Air Zoom Victory. I thought it was just, yeah, let's call it that. Whatever.
Yeah, anyway, so it's got the pods in the base of the forefoot. And this is probably the most aggressive spike I've worn since I've worn like a Max Cat back in like, I don't know, mid-2000s. And yet, you know, it runs a bit bigger as well. Like, I went to the same size as the Dragonfly. There's more volume in the forefoot. So, and this spike is probably built, it's built for the mile, I think. But I reckon I would struggle to wear this shoe past 1,500 meters without my heel dropping. So the forefoot's quite dense. And if you hit it, it feels really sweet. But if you let your heel drop, you feel like you're dropping about a centimeter down. So I think for short reps, like 200s and stuff, it's been fantastic. But I honestly feel like I'm about a centimeter and a half taller when I wear that shoe, because once you're on your toes, it feels fantastic.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, and that's been a bit of a change from the like the last Victories, the Victory 2s, Victory Elites. It's been one of the biggest changes in spikes in terms of like how a spike looks anyway, especially a distance spike.
Well, it's a lot weightier, you know. That's the one thing. If Tommy had a size 13 on his foot, there's a lot of weight under the forefoot where the pods are. And so it doesn't feel like a shoe you want to wear for much more than a mile, just because of the weight alone, I reckon.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. And it, like, there's another spike coming out called the Viper Fly, which is a sprinting spike that uses Air Zoom pods as well.
Yeah.
You might have seen images of it. It hasn't hit the market, but that thing there, like, they changed the density of the Zoom, like the pods, so it's certainly not the same sort of softness that you see in the Alpha Fly. It's a lot harder.
Are you going to be stocking those sort of sprinting spikes as well?
Oh, when they come in, for sure. Yeah, when they come in, they just haven't. Yeah. We haven't been showing them yet. Oh, look, I saw them at Nike back in December last year when they were planning on releasing them for Tokyo Olympics. Christian Coleman was going to wear them, but yeah. Anyway,
it's another story. Well, yeah. We went out to the Inside Running Public the other day. We asked a question. We sort of, it was revolved around how people get their knowledge to go and select a shoe. Who do they take advice from? And, you know, on this panel here, you have two podiatrists, you got three runners, and two podiatrists and a retailer. So we all have slightly different sort of pathways to get to our knowledge point now through here. But when you guys were younger and runners, how did you select shoes? Early days, go back in retrospect, you know, two decades.
My first pair of running shoes I bought at Nike Town in Melbourne. That Nike had their own like flagship store in the city, and went upstairs and there was like the running shoes on the wall.
So good that place.
Wasn't it cool? Yeah.
No, it was cool.
Yeah. I got a pair of Pegasus. I think I was probably like maybe a kid's eight. I mean, a men's eight or something. It was like my first pair of running shoes, and it was felt so special. But I didn't. I just went in there and they helped me. Whoever in the store must have just said, like, I pretty much told them I was using it for running, doing a bit of cross country, like in school, and they've just gone out and got some shoes.
Nice. Tommy,
I don't remember too well, but I do remember that I was probably about 15, rocked up to local sports store. It was the Tennis Ranch in Gladesville. Don't know if anyone lives around that area and knows there. It's pretty iconic, the Tennis Ranch on Victoria Road. And they do running shoes there, apparently, we found out. And I got a pair of, I don't remember how it was selected, but not so much of a surprise. It was the ASICS Kayano. That was my first pair of running shoes. Classic.
I know how that was selected. It was
What are you trying to say?
My first pair of shoes, I was wearing the Tiger Touch. And so when I upgraded from the Tiger Touch, I went into like a retail shop. But in the country, most of the country only stocked, I think, Brooks or Asics only. It was pretty biased. You own a retail shop, you have an account with Asics, you buy your football boots, your netball shoes, but they had all their running shoes. And I reckon I went into a GT 2050 back then, where the Duo Max posting was like from the forefoot all the way to the middle of the rear foot. And it was like a heavy, clunky shoe compared to the Tiger Touch. I needed support apparently, and the shoe was better. And back in, I think, the mid, even late 90s, those shoes were being sold because of, I guess, retail knowledge, I guess. You know, this shoe's more supportive, you'll get more mileage out of it, you'll get less injuries. Long story short, I remember that shoe lasted like 1,200 Ks, I reckon, maybe longer. And it was like, we're talking about a Duo Max posting, the shoe was completely inverted at the end of its lifespan. Like only the Duo Max posting was like truly left on the midsole. And anyway, I got medial tibial stress syndrome because I was running in a shoe that was like 12 degrees inverted after about 500 Ks. So,
So do you want to run through some of the answers that people have given? And we'll go through the main ones.
All right. So you guys got it in front of you?
Some of the... got it.
Yeah. So there's a bit of a general consensus through here. Like, you know, this guy... Actually, Gemma Crichton, first of all, podiatrist and physio, because they know my running and injury history.
See, this is a trigger for me.
okay. Tell us the trigger.
Perfect.
Okay. So what does that physio – like, let's go off the physio first. So the physio consults with patients all day, right?
Yep.
Gets to work, consults with patients all day, day after day, 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
Now – how often do you think that physio looks at a shoe, looks at an update of a shoe, understands the fit of that shoe and how it relates to the shape of someone's foot? How often, just off the top of your head?
Probably less likely than we would like.
I'm going to say with the best knowledgeable shoe physio, they see probably maybe... outside of their own, they see maybe 10 people put their foot into a new shoe out of sort of one or two models out of the entire footwear range. Now, that's a massive limitation, right? To give advice to someone on what shoes they should wear without seeing the shape of their foot go into their shoe and hearing how that feels. I can't even do that, right? So I see 20, 30 pairs of shoes go on different feet every single day over 10 years. That's a lot of foot shapes into different shoes and seeing what works and what doesn't. I still can't have a shoe come in and go, yeah, you know what? I can't fully back this for you because I haven't seen it on your foot yet. Yet we have practitioners writing down specific recommendations for particular shoes and not giving any flexibility outside of that. I just can't fathom how they can be that confident in a recommendation.
That definitely still exists. There's no doubt working in retail, you hear the stories of just one or two shoes going in. I mean, from our end, from a practitioner's end, when you see someone run, they come in with an injury, like 9 times out of 10, you have to give them some sort of advice. They're coming in for advice or direction on shoes. They have to walk away with at least direction. The beauty of having specialty retail now is that you guys do get exposed to 100 shoe fittings per day, for example. So I'm always pretty comfortable. A lot of the times I put things on paper just to sort of almost, you know, make them feel happy that I feel like I've done something. But a lot of the times I'm like, go to the running company. They'll fit you really well. They'll probably have a few other selections on top of these. And, you know, just make sure that you're picking the one that suits your needs the best. Maybe historically when there was no specialty retail work, you know, you had to put more detailing into shoes. So maybe the older practitioners are probably a little bit more stuck in their ways perhaps. Whereas I think if you're working with retail shops, I don't know what you're like, Tommy, over in Sydney, but we have some good retail outlets right here, like the running company, and this stuff makes it really easy for us to send off for good servicing, really.
Yeah. I reckon The key is working with the run specialty stores and just having that relationship where you actually trust each other And also, like the practitioner, I'd always be a little bit cautious if you're seeing a practitioner that's being very rigid with recommendations, because, like you said, Julian, you don't know how it's going to look on their foot. And even if you do sort of have experience and you've gone and you've seen the shoes, the models change and they can change from 1 year to the next quite dramatically. And how many practitioners are seeing and knowing what exactly is happening with each update of each model, of each brand? It's not practical for the practitioner to know that. So you got to let the people that are working with the shoes, working with the runners in the store, have some say in what's going to be appropriate. It's just unrealistic to be too rigid.
What I would recommend for practitioners listening, and also for patients of practitioners who are looking for shoe recommendations, ask what features they should look for. So if a practitioner wants medial support in a shoe, write medial support. Don't write Brooks Adrenaline full stop. Right. Give them a chance to experience different feels and use their own feedback and comfort to determine which shoe they should go for, and listen to potential issues from the experienced staff member of the store. And that means that everyone's confident, because there's like, although it is a thing where someone comes in the store and we are just stupid shoe boys and girls, and you guys are absolute gods to these people. So what you have to do is you have to sort of maybe put a little bit of confidence into your patient, that those that work in the store actually do know what they're doing. That's very helpful for us.
So what makes a specialist then in being able to prescribe shoes? I mean, at the end of the day, you've like I'll use ASICS as an example. In our field, ASICS is quite popular. It's had like an association of sports medicine Australia for many years, so it often gets referred, and often the big quote coming in, I've always worn ASICS. And now we've got this nice, almost, I wouldn't call it division, but you've got their fun shoes and their traditional shoes that exist right now. And I remember seeing a prominent sports podiatrist in Melbourne quote on a social media page. You were talking a bit about this is about 2 or 3 years ago, back when probably the new foams and ASICs probably weren't out and about, but there was a shoe called the Roadhawk 2 where the foam was like a bit more compliant, a bit more fun, a bit more pop compared to, say, like a gel pursuit, which is probably more traditional EVA, a bit firmer underfoot. And this podiatrist referred to the Roadhawk 2 as a gym shoe. And that was the advice given. It was the gym shoe. Yet that was the only shoe at that point in time I really enjoyed running in an ASICS at that point in time. And so that's the advice that he sort of gave off. And essentially, this is not a gym shoe. It's a running shoe. It's definitely, you know, built for running. It's called the Roadhawk. And so this type of advice comes from allied health practitioners. Why are we getting that type of advice still in 2020? You know, why are people, is it because of their experience in running, you think, that makes them a specialist? Or do you think it's a combination of a few things? Or
like as you said before, we got different backgrounds as practitioners, as working in retail, but we're all runners. And I think it comes down to, as well, you whoever you see, you want to see someone that at least has some, I think, decent experience with running personally. So I think that makes a big difference. Actually, seeing someone, talking to someone about running shoes that does enough running, that they have personal experience, and see runners clinically, but potentially, yeah, obviously also run. I think that would make a difference in that situation.
Yep. For me, specialist, like someone who actively follows the updates to shoes. Sort of has a listen to the meaning, like the purpose behind different shoes, the reason that certain brands are changing, and not just looking at it from a podiatry style, like medical background, looking at it from the perception of a runner and how this could benefit the experience of the runner. Because not everyone buys their shoes because of a medical reason. They buy it to get a good experience from the shoe. And there's no way a practitioner, there is those that run a lot, those that experience a lot of shoes, but it's very hard to tell someone or like recommend a shoe based on how this customer will experience the shoe. So that's why we have treadmills in the store, to hear someone's feedback on what they feel in the shoe.
And there's a bit of a consensus through here. A lot of the feedback was, you know, the running company and specialty, so podiatrists, physios, both who are runners, et cetera. So there seems to be a consensus there. How about this one, though? This one's come up a few times. For B White's 27, he says, usually try and find online reviews, articles and videos of shoes I'm interested in.
I'd like to hear what you think about that, Julian.
Online reviews are so hard to get right, because your foot and how it feels in shoes and your running gait and your particular preference for feels is different from every other person. So I give a shoe 10 out of 10. This is the fucking best shoe I've ever worn in my life. You give it to Tom and he goes, this is garbage, I hate it, 2 out of 10. Who's more credible here?
Well, this is interesting, because even that value of the shoe, how it feels, will change relative to your fitness at time as well. Comfort's that consistent moving pattern. I reckon you described it once, Julian, as like it's like trying to pick what you want for dinner that night. Your taste does change relative. You can't have comfort's come up here multiple times. Like, I pick a shoe that's comfortable, and of course that continues to change relative to what the purpose of the shoe is for. And it changes for individuals who are doing reviews online as well. And probably the biggest thing with online reviews, there's always a little bit of bias in there, because they've just been given a shoe for free. So it's hard to like make them sound like they're a really poor shoe. If someone mentions like a small thing, it's probably a big thing. So in a review.
And one of the greatest examples of where online reviews have no credibility is a forum or a Facebook group called Running Shoe Geeks.
Yeah.
Same namesake as us. The absolute ridiculous moronic recommendations that I see in there, I've just gone immediately off it. But yet I see people taking advice there that is just so wrong and bad. And yeah, the review might be that person loves their shoe and it whatever. That doesn't mean you're going to love your shoe. That doesn't mean that. Like, if someone's very technical in their review, you can sort of scour the review for the technical bit you want to take out and go, okay, well, yeah, that suits my preference. That's why. That's how a review could be helpful. if it isolates certain areas of the shoe that you know from experience work for you, okay, great. I'm not going to listen to this guy saying he liked it or not. I'm going to look at the actual in-depth specs, tech stuff of the shoe.
How about this one? Club Coach, Specialty Running Stores, and advice on runners from real runners. So, like, there's a couple that are sort of speak amongst their training groups, and they talk about shoes amongst training groups. And I think it'd be interesting, like, when you're in an environment of like 50 runners, for example, there's a lot of shoes going through. There's a lot of talk about shoes. You don't really talk about anything else but running or shoes. And, you know, without having actually like specific experience, guys that have been running for 10, 15, 20 years, like, these guys tend to have pretty good intuition as to how a shoe feels. What do you think about them as, you know, giving advice on shoes compared to, say, someone who, you know, stays up to date with just like the academic knowledge on shoes? You know, who would you take your advice from out of those two populations?
Tommy, you go. What does Run Crew talk? What does Run Crew talk about?
Gary just suggests low drop shoes.
Yeah, there's a fair bit of shoe chat. There's some shoe lovers in our group, that's for sure. I reckon it's not a terrible place. I mean, you're generally in a similar demographic of people. If you're in the same group, you're running, and generally the people you're chatting with are people probably doing similar amount of running, potentially similar amount of experience. You're doing this amount of sessions, this amount of volume, whatever. So you're kind of at least in the ballpark of someone in the same demographic, which you may suit the same type of shoe, potentially. And then obviously you have an abundance of experience in that group. So I would say, depending on whose brains you pick, you might get better. You could potentially get better advice from there than from a health practitioner, or you get the dud retailer. Like
absolutely. Yeah, that's good. I think it's probably one of the more better, like, audiences to sort of hear advice on shoes. The fall down is that a lot of, like, even you'll pick out an elite runner who runs like 8,000 k's a year plus, and they they have no idea what shoes they even wear and why they like them or not. So
true. Yeah.
There's some guys out there who come into our store who are passionate runners who might not be considered elite, or like they're the middle to back of packers. And those guys know everything about shoes, and they're so articulate how they describe shoes, and like they can come in and know more shit about shoes than I do.
It's amazing when you find that those people are like, I can do a warm up with some of the juniors who I run with at between 16 and 19 years of age, and I have a conversation with them about shoes and how they're functioning and how they feel. That is arguably much better than work, like, you know, conferences at sports medicine that I go to in a period of 20 minutes. I think, oh, these, if I walked out of the clinic and had one of those 16, 18 year old kids go in there to try and give shoe advice to someone, I'd probably be almost, you know, sometimes as confident with them giving good shoe advice to another runner as I would my colleagues. And I know it sounds wrong, but I guess that's just the difference with experience plus the knowledge as well. Like there's, you need both, don't you? You need exposure to the shoe companies and development, but you also need to have a bit of experience and feel. Like it goes a long way.
That's I think we'll finish this by saying that retail has traditionally been very poor in Australia, where there's you actually need, like, there's been a situation where if you walk into a general sports store or even what has been considered running specialty in the past, then you're probably going to know more about the shoe than the person you talk to. And that's where this whole confusing area where everyone's giving different advice and you don't know where to take it from has come about. But I can tell you, if you go into a true specialty store and start just having a discussion, you're going to come away with a lot more confidence knowing the person that's in there does that for a living and has the running background as well as the sort of industry background, and then even they do research and look into the medical side of things as well. So you have to pick your stores absolutely.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's, thanks for all the feedback from the listeners there. There's some good stuff through there. And there's a fair few just here. I listened to Tom DeCanto only.
That was definitely my favorite. wise man.
Fucking Reebok. Everyone's wearing Reebok now.
There's a fair bit of moose in there as well. There's a fair bit of shoe geeks, actually. So there's a fair bit of power here. So I hope they realize that. We'll hope that segment basically cuts in the ground. But when we say a shoe's good, for example, it is relative. That's a relative term.
Well, that reminds me, this week's episode is brought to you by Brooks, the running specialty brand. Founded over 100 years ago, Brooks have just launched the 21st edition of their best-selling model, the Adrenaline GTS 21. The GTS 21 offers a soft ride and reliable support for however your body moves, so you can forget the shoes and enjoy the run. Their premium cushion technology DNA Loft now extends all the way from the lateral heel to forefoot for a buttery smooth ride. Brooks have shifted their focus beyond the feet to the most injury-prone part of a runner's body, the knees. This is through the integration of guide rails, Brooks's holistic support system, which keeps you moving comfortably by keeping excess movement in check. Find out more about guide rails and the Adrenaline GDS21 at brooksrunning.com.au or your local specialty running store. We'll also be reviewing it in the next Shoe Geeks episode. Well, I will be anyway, so be sure to tune in. Okay, Tommy, next one. Overrated shoes. Let's just go bang on this one.
All right, okay, we're doing it. So, I think we're going to sort of chat about some potentially overrated shoes. I'm going to touch on one that is a relatively recent one, one that came out, I think it was the end of last year, from Nike, which I do love Nike. I think they're pretty much one of the more innovative brands, but they brought out one called the Joyride. You guys remember that one, don't you?
The Joyride, yep. Little beads of balls in the sole.
It's an environmental mess, wasn't it?
You never stocked that one, did you, Julian?
No, mate. I don't.
Did you have the option to stock it?
No way. That was that went to. I think that just went to fashion stores, to be honest.
So you couldn't even put an order in?
No. That didn't get shown to running. Especially stores, I don't think.
See, that's interesting, and that's what annoys me a little bit, because when I first heard of it, it was a lot of marketing on socials, and a lot of it was just endorsements from their elite runners. So it was, to me, it was pitched as like this, not performance, but a technical running shoe. So four runners. And it was, I think it was marketed as like a recovery shoe, right? So it was like, it was soft and whatnot. And it was for sort of your recovery runs.
Well, it got big. The marketing of that almost was off the back end of the Nike Infinity and stuff, wasn't it? It all sort of blended in together. It was off the back of that. And that marketing was quite big as well.
So, yeah. So I guess it was like there was some hype. There was some hype around the Infinity. And then there was, I felt like there was a little bit of hype around this one. And I, like, full disclosure, I never actually had the shoe. I haven't tried it on or run in it. So all I'm saying is I'm just talking from what I've heard, what I've read in online reviews, and just seeing people run in it. Have you guys seen many people run in this shoe?
No.
I had one person that came in a clinic and said it was the greatest shoe of all time. It was. Doesn't matter. Yeah, you do get that pressed every now and then. So,
this is a good story to this, fellas, and this is one of the, this is a reason behind what you're sort of hearing, or what's going on is we went to a showing 2000. I reckon it was 2017 early, where we had, at Nike. I went in there with my friend Chris, who has the Clifton Hill store, and they. The showing went on, we got shown our shoes, and then all of a sudden there was like, we didn't get shown the Vaporfly, but it was called Vaporfly, and no one knew what it was. The rep didn't know what it was. He's like, oh, we think it might be a racing shoe, but no one's told us about it. And like, you're expected to place orders. No one knows what the shoe is, right? And at the time we're like, oh, okay. Shit. And at the time we had full like a cleanse with Nike, so if the shoe didn't work we could send it back. So we're like, okay, we'll take a bit of a chance on this one, order it. And then there was another shoe at the same showing called the Vapor Max. He had a sample of this shoe that he said, now marketing are telling us this is going to be a running shoe and we're going to put it in the running range. It's going to go to specialty running. There's going to be a lot of marketing about this shoe. And we looked at it and it was like this full, the whole sole was just one big air bubble. And we said, that's not a running shoe. And it's like, oh yeah, I didn't think so. Marketing said as it is though. And we're like, no one's running in that fucking shoe, I tell you right now. And if they are, they shouldn't be. And he's like, okay. And so that was offered to us to purchase the first round. And obviously marketing is determining where shoes are going and what they're going to be used for rather than the actual product guys. So this is this is the breakdown between a product team and marketing and the sales guy in the middle trying to work out what's going on. And Joyride was part of that, I reckon. Marketing kind of fucking up a lifestyle shoe.
Yeah, there's room for error in that situation. So. Well, you know how, I mean, this is a good company. Salomon are a very good company, famous for building their trail shoes. But you know how they sort of went, I reckon, was it 3 or 4 years ago, they moved onto the road? They had a bit of a range through there. I mean, me personally, I didn't get along with almost any of their road running shoes. And I think because it was, you know, sold amongst specialty retailing and specialty retail stores, and Salomon was so synonymous with success in trail running that people did gravitate to them. And I reckon I wore 2 or 3. But there was a podiatry assisted design shoe called the Predict. And I mean, it didn't get a lot of leverage in the general market. Obviously, it didn't sell a lot. You would have stocked it at your shop, I'm assuming, Julian. Oh, but
they tried hard. They tried hard.
Yeah. Well, I got my foot onto one of them through a retail shop. And, you know, it's very rare you put a shoe on. And I mean, there was a bit of hype attached to it. It was meant to change a bit of knee motion or reduce a bit of knee loading and all, but it was just horrible. The upper was flimsy. The midsole was dead. It didn't have a purpose, a tempo or a mileage shoe. It sat somewhere in between. And after 8Ks, I got back and I thought that, you know, I got back and it was meant to go for 10 miles. I got back, changed my shoes. I didn't even know what I put on. It was like it might have been a pair of Infinity Reacts. Went out for the last 8Ks and thought, this is chalk and cheese. And that shoe went straight off to Vinny's. Like
I was going to say, I reckon this is the classic example of where the science and the data doesn't match up with real life, with comfort. Because like this shoe apparently like reduced muscle vibrations. It reduced the amount the foot everted, like the amount of pronated, all these things that they thought were going to relate to like this amazing advanced shoe. And then runners put it on, they're like, oh, this feels like shit.
The deadest midsole I've ever put on. Like,
it was hollow. It was weight on your foot that was useless. Like, it just didn't give anything back. So,
it's like it got designed in a laboratory without a single runner ever giving feedback into it.
Yeah.
Like, I will design this shoe on a computer and then tell everyone how good it is for running in. And every runner just said, hell no.
And I don't think there's a second. I don't think there was a second model, was there? I'm not sure.
No, there was.
Yeah, there's a second one.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Surprisingly.
Someone must be buying it then. So.
Nah, I don't think so. anyway, yeah, my overrated shoe is the Asics Kayano number 1 through to number 27.
my original. How could you?
Yeah. Oh, mate, don't worry. I had one too. We've all had one, but do you know why it's the most overrated shoe? Because it is rated the highest by the most amount of people in the world. Because, like, just at least once to twice a day, someone comes down and goes, yeah, I run in the Asics Kayano. I really love it. And you're like, okay, this is going to be great because most other shoes feel better than this. So if you're loving this, you're going to absolutely adore what we can bring out against it. It's still relevant for a lot for small percentage of the population, without a doubt relevant, but it's just too widespread and too niche of a shoe it doesn't make sense. So that's my answer. It's an overrated shoe for its sales, I guess.
It's the ultimate footy preseason shoe, isn't it, here in this country as well. But can you
black
get
one.
People yeah the black Can you get people from the Kayano into the Kayano Light, which is more fun, it's more enjoyable, the stability is a bit different? Can you, just from the name, do you think you'll be able to transfer a few?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the good thing is when most people come in, we still have a Kayano in store that we, like if someone's dead set on it and they come in and we take them through a bit of a process, we get them in other shoes, and then at the very end we go, here, chuck this on, this is the new Kayano. They're like, oh, it feels heavy. It feels slappy. It's stiff. Yep. The others felt better. And you're like, yep, you're beauty. You've bought into like the process. And some people put it on and go, yeah, this still feels the best to me. And you're like, okay, cool. Let's go with that. That's the Kayano. You're the Kayano guy. And then I can't give too much away, but second half next year, Kayano gets the best update I've ever seen a Kayano get, and it falls from this.
I've heard this 20 times.
No, this is different. This is exciting. Next year, we'll talk some more about the Kayano.
That's good to hear.
We're in the business of not trying to just get people to, you know, handle more running, but also to enjoy more running. And we've just got so much more selection now. And I think that's the thing. Asics is overrated because I don't think it's as enjoyable as what's out there. And even within the Asics range itself, geez, they've got some enjoyable shoes now as well.
One overrated one that probably should get a special mention is the Vibram Five Fingers. Surely.
They did what their purpose was.
They built my business in 2009, Tommy. Well, I saw so many second metatarsal stressies. It was good for knee pain, you know, well, better for knee pain, but yeah.
Foot gloves. I've still got a pair.
Foot gloves.
No, you don't. No, you
hold on to them forever.
Surfing shoes.
I thought you would have, if you were living in the US, you could have got a full refund for those by now.
No, it wasn't a full refund. I think it was like... I think it was like 20% refund or something. You couldn't get your full money back, I know, but it did pretty much put them out of business.
You shouldn't get a full refund. If you're a person who buys a shoe thinking that they can fix injury with that, they are half the problem. More, they are 80% of the problem, I think. That's probably 20% how they worked it out, is that 20% was the shoe's problem, 80% was the person that bought it. So.
Good. There's some shit shoes we've talked about.
Yeah, that's it. That's a good episode. That was fun.
Good stuff.
All right. Well, let's.
All right. Until next month.
Yeah. We'll talk. That's wait, I've got one more. Sorry, boys. You have to put up with me for one more bit. Yeah. This week's episode is brought to you by Brooks, the Seattle-based running specialist with over 100 years of experience in the footwear game. At Brooks, their purpose is to inspire everyone to run and be active because every day with a run is better. They use this philosophy plus a combination of runner insights and biomechanics to develop products that will enable you to run further, faster, and happier.
And on that note, I'm in lockdown for 6 days here in South Australia. I'm taking the Hyperion for a run on the treadmill.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
That'd be perfect. Test it out. Put the foot pods on. See what the data says.
Oh, you're in your element now. Data world.
That's it. Spot on. All right. Always. You guys have a good month.
See you, fellas.
You too.
Take care.
See ya.
See ya.
Doesn't matter if it don't come back. Under the cover.